Game On on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein, your way.
And a very good evening from Damien O'Mara. You are welcome to Wednesday's Game On. We've got a busy hour of chat to come between now and 7 o'clock. Groups E and F conclude at Euro 2020 today, and some nations who have big tournament ambitions still looking to book their places in the knockout stages. Lisa Fallon's with me in studio. We're watching the games between Sweden and Poland, and also that between Slovakia and a somewhat rampant Spain.
Okay. Nice crisp delivery. Nice. Pellaqueta was in there making a nuisance of himself. Here is Pedri. Oh, lovely vaulting over the top for Gerard Moreno. Dubravka finds himself in no man's land, trying to recover. Now the cushioned header is in. Wonderful goal, Aymeric Laporte. That is a beautifully placed header, and in first half stoppage time, his first goal for Spain extends the lead to two.
We've got plenty of Gaelic games to come as well. We're going to be looking ahead to this weekend's Ladies Gaelic Football League final between Cork and Dublin, and also looking back on Sunday's win for Kilkenny over Galway in the Camogie decider.
Marja, we're delighted to welcome you back to Croke Park Stadium.
What experience again from Colette Dormer there, and super defending. You know, she was missing last weekend, didn't play against Tipperary, and I think Kilkenny really missed her in the backs.
And the referee blows the full-time whistle. Kilkenny are the Littlewoods Ireland's league champions 2021.
And as the Dublin ladies footballers go about to embark on their own drive for five, the men are looking probably for heaven with seven or some such rhyming slang like that. We're going to be hearing from one of their talisman, Kieran Kilkenny.
Everyone's really excited about it. Everyone was delighted to get back out onto the field again for the National League, get competitive games, and the championship's coming thick and fast then as well, so they just have to be prepared for each one as they come.
All of that to come between now and 7.
Game on 2FM.
And you can text the programme. Our number is 51552. You can tweet us at GameOn2FM. And delighted to say Lisa Fallon is with me in studio. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
You are in the midst of like the greatest summer of all summers. Just football, football and more football. The only inconvenience is we're into this thing now of two games. So like, I presume you're a multi-screener.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I do enjoy it. I have to say, just football for breakfast, lunch, dinner and tea has been really nice over the last couple of weeks. I have to say I've enjoyed it immensely.
And then the day job as a coach with Galway United thrown into the middle of it as well, which just adds to it. We were chatting off air beforehand, and I knew the answer I was going to get, but I said to you, are you of the view that like it's great for the tournament to lose one of the big guns and just have a real talking point? And you looked at me as if like I was just like, what are you talking about? So you are firmly of the mindset here, let's get Sweden and Spain through in particular from Group E as it goes, and I presume the hope then later on is France, Germany and Portugal all to advance. I can't work out half the permutations, but you want the big guns there until the death.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually love seeing all the big teams, all the best players there, and you know, those big colossal head-to-heads. Like we're so lucky that we've, you know, had games like Portugal, France, Germany going head to head in the group stages even, you know. So, but as the tournament progresses, I actually love seeing the best teams coming up against each other, and I actually think this will be one of the toughest Euros to win because of how strong so many of the squads are and how many squads believe they've a chance coming into it, and you know, the backstories, but even the quality and the depth in the squads. There's so many really top class players at the moment, and you know, as the tournament progresses, I think it's just going to be fantastic watch.
Can you shelve the professionalism of being a football coach and being, you know, Robin, like not necessarily Robin McCone, geez, I really like the way Luis Enrique did this, or I really like the way, why isn't Gareth Southgate doing that? Can you just go back to being like the child that we all were, falling in love with football and just watching it as a fan?
I think, you know what, I think I actually that I have that there every day. Every match I go to, it's something it's always there. I just, as soon as you watch a game you always take those little bits from people, and I think that's part of your human nature. You're always looking at, as a coach certainly, you're always looking, God, that's really good, I really like that, no, I don't like that. And you know, you're always trying to, the thing about this role is you always have to evolve. You can never stay still because the game just continuously evolves. Players demand more and more of you all the time, and you know, you want to bring new ideas and freshen things up and, you know, be a little bit different and always, as I say, always evolve yourself as a coach, but also how your team plays. So I love that, but I think all of that passion actually comes from that being a fan inside, you know, every game you just want to watch. It doesn't matter what game it is, you know, they're all great to watch.
So who's impressed you most then in terms of not necessarily an innovation, but just how, you know, a team has bonded collectively, obviously behind a game plan, and, you know, who is maybe not necessarily the best team you've seen or the team you think are going to win, but who has kind of caught your eye most in terms of innovation or how they've gone about things?
I think Denmark have obviously, with the Christian Eriksen situation, I think there's a real... not that they wouldn't have had that bond anyway, but I think they've really galvanised as a unit, and you can see them growing into the tournament. And, you know, you're half thinking, is there shades of 1992 just there with them at the moment? But for me, the team that really looks like they could be the real deal here, and that I might have thought of them as a dark horse, but maybe not quite as contenders, are Italy. I mean, Italy are they're a serious team. The attack and flair, the defensive solidity, the camaraderie, you know, they celebrate a challenge, winning a challenge, with the same gusto that they celebrate scoring goals. I think there's a lovely vibe off Italy this year, and they've really, really impressed me. I've enjoyed watching all their games, even the other night now when they made eight changes. They were still a joy to watch, and they were still a good side when they played Wales. So, yeah, Italy for me, certainly, and I think Denmark are going to continue to grow into this tournament, I think.
And when you look, you know, we're now in this situation where, for the most part, we're still in permutation city in terms of if three teams come out of this group and that group and this group, this is what happens. So we know that Italy play Austria at Wembley in 3 days' time. We know that Wales play Denmark. So, you know, let's go Mystic Meg on it. You would fancy Italy to get a result against Austria.
I do. Haven't seen Austria and haven't seen Italy. I think there's just way more quality. I think Austria actually are a good side. There are really some really good players, like, you know, Sabitzer and players like that are playing a really high level. They're a good side, but I just think Italy have that little bit of creativity. You're not really sure how they're going. They're scoring goals from all over the pitch, you know, from midfield, from their strikers. I think Italy definitely will win that game. I think the Wales-Denmark game, I think that one's a tougher one to call. I think Wales have been decent, but haven't seen the way a really understrength Italy team, you know, dominate them, and we're able to score against them and played against them, and the momentum that Denmark have, I think Denmark might come now with that one.
Okay. We have 50 minutes played in the game between Slovakia and Spain, which is the one we have on our monitor. Sweden are in action against Poland in the other game of the group. And, you know, in many ways, the curse or the challenge for managers in taking on these tournaments is that here we are now, Spain are into their third game, and you've only got the impression that Luis Enrique is able to pick what is his preferred starting 11 today. Through injury, through Sergio Busquets with COVID and everything else, that very often we're guilty of judging teams on their first match or maybe their first two matches, and ignoring the fact that there's all this external stuff and squad rotation and everything, which really massively impacts on, you know, how settled Enrique Spain is now compared to what he might have liked it to have been a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, but even coming into the tournament, I don't think he knew his best 11. I think he knew his best formation. It's 4-3-3. That's the way he always plays. But if you look at tonight's selection, Pau Torres is out. He started the first two games. I think he's out because he's got a yellow card. I don't think he's out for any other reason. And he's brought in, as you said, Sergio Busquets, Cesar Azpilicueta, Pablo Sarabia and Eric Garcia. So, you know, I think more along the four forward line, he probably hasn't been sure because he's mixed and matched between Olmo and Sarabia. You know, Morata's not firing on all cylinders. Moreno's been good. I still don't think he knows. I'll be honest with you. I still don't think he knows what his best team is. But I would say, watching them tonight, Busquets is making a big difference, because that first half there, they've dominated the game, and they've looked more incisive going forward. That was a big problem with them. I covered their game against Poland, and they were so, you know, side to side, half-hearted going forward, players turning back when they could have gone forward, and it actually became a frustrating watch. I can imagine for a forward player, it's frustrating to play in when you're not getting that kind of service. But, you know, to be fair to them tonight, I think they've been really good. Sarabia had a chance, Azpilicueta had a great chance, and that was and then they missed a penalty. Morata missed a penalty
in the 12th minute.
Moreno taking off the penalties after he missed against Poland, and then obviously Morata then misses. In fairness, it's a decent save by Dubravka, but probably hit it at a good height, but it just shows where his confidence maybe is at. But then obviously they take the lead. It's gone down as a Dubravka OG, Sarabia with the initial ball, and then Aymeric Laporte actually scored a great goal right in the dying moments of the first half, deep into injury time from a corner, third phase really from a corner. But they just kept the ball alive. But I think they've been really good in that half, and that's the best they've played so far in the tournament.
Sweden leading Poland by a goal to nil. Forsberg with a goal in the second minute. So that table, the live table, we knew Sweden had already progressed. Sweden top of the table, 7 points as it stands. Spain in second with 5 points. Slovakia third with 3 points. It's interesting, there's a fascinating article in the New York Times, Rory Smith today, basically lamenting the lack of Spanish goal scorers, like Spanish front men. That basically, now his thesis is that, you know, young lads fell in love with Xavi and Iniesta and the kind of what Brian Kerr would call the dinky midfielders, and basically no one wants to be the man up top on his own anymore, and you've now got this aging generation of Spanish strikers, which,
yeah, and the likes of Pedri coming through, like he's what a player he is, you know. But yeah, that is what they're lacking. It is what they are lacking, someone who has that ruthlessness and that relentlessness to just keep putting the ball in the back of the net. Because to be fair, they have the players like Koke, Pedri, Busquets, you know, that midfield, they're well able to put quality ball in there.
Yeah, so who'd have thunk it that Spain would be lamenting a striker. The big one tonight, Group F, is fascinating. France on top, 4 points from their two games. Germany and Portugal tied on points with 3 points and goal difference. Germany in action against Hungary tonight, Portugal in action against France. This could well be one of these ones where one of the big guns goes.
Yeah, I hope it isn't. But I think, you know, it's going to be there's so much quality in this group. Like, you look at Ronaldo the last day, I think people talking about all the records that he has, and, you know, I said it the other day, it's like if you tell him there's something he hasn't done, he'll go, okay, write it down on the to-do list, and then he'll just tick the box. Like, I think they said, you haven't scored against Germany, okay, give me 15 minutes.
Yeah.
He goes and scores against Germany. But you know, and it's hard to believe that actually Portugal are in, you know, a bit of bother, actually. And he's scored 3 goals already in the tournament. But I mean, France, I still don't, no one saw the France draw against Hungary coming. So you wonder, and to be fair, you look at the Portugal game, I think it was the 84th minute before Portugal actually scored the first goal. And then they go on to win it comfortably, but by the scoreline. But it certainly wasn't a comfortable win for them. So Germany might well have, I think that game will either go one of two ways. Germany will either have their work cut out for them tonight and find it hard and just have to have that patience and stick in there and you know, be patient and probe them and eventually pick them off and get their goals. Or I'd wonder, you know, the big performance against Portugal, the huge performance against France, a result like that, whatever it takes out of you physically, that will have taken a huge amount out of the players emotionally and mentally. So, you know, in tournament football, those first group games, you don't get a huge amount of recovery time. And I just wonder, will Hungary actually be able to go again at that same level of intensity for this game tonight?
You best turn around and look at the screen, because there's been a third goal for Spain. So I let you get the replay for that. So Germany against Hungary, that game taking place in Munich at 8 o'clock. Portugal in action against France as well. So we will wait and see how that plays out over the course of the evening. It's Sod's Law now that as I'm waiting for you to describe the goal, the director's taken an eternity to come round to it. So we will we'll keep an eye on that in a second. It's interesting, you know, you're talking about the pressure that's on managers and the pressure that's on players. You know, Luis Enrique came into this tournament savaged for his squad selection. Gareth Southgate must be living in fear of reading the papers every morning. And you'd imagine the pressure the managers are under tonight. It is, like, irrespective of what you say about the honour and the glamour and the financial benefit, it is the most thankless job in the world at the minute, managing certain countries.
Yeah, it certainly is. And if people are wondering, Alba put in an unbelievable cross and Sarabia just smashed it just off the edge of the penalty area, smashed it into the bottom corner, a great finish. But yeah, as you were saying, the Southgate situation, I mean, I think the England job is a tough one because of the amount of scrutiny. It's like, no matter what, it's like you can't do right for doing wrong.
Yeah. Like, he's not playing Jadon Sancho, then he comes in for 6 minutes last night, and it's disrespectful that he only gave him 6 minutes, having had to endure a clamour to give him time at all. Like, you, Why would you bother?
I know, but you know what? And like, it probably is amplified because we hear and see it so much in the UK, yeah. and that. But there, but it, like, there's such an interesting story behind the Poland situation, because Paulo Sousa, he took over because the previous Poland manager was sacked in January. I was reading this the other day. It was so interesting. And he basically got sacked, not because they had qualified for the Euros or that they had maintained their place in the top league of the UEFA News. It was because they didn't like the style of play.
Yeah.
And then he dropped a couple of players like Kamil Glick for their game against Hungary. They were 2-0 down. He brought them on at half-time, Glick on, and they go on and they draw the game 3-3. Their next game was against Andorra. They win the game 3-0. Lewandowski scores 2 goals. And then he takes a knock on his knee and is out for 4 weeks, and then the manager gets criticised for being disrespectful.
It's great, isn't it?
Highly irresponsible was the quote for playing Lewandowski, yeah. in a game like that. But that's what I mean. I suppose, look, that's the role of the media sometimes, but is to critique and look at that and see the angles. But you know, I think no matter who Gareth Southgate picks, he's not going to get it right.
I was looking at it, like, you know, he was, you know, carried shoulder high in the media a couple of months ago for building this new young team that was going to go on and play over the course of multiple tournaments. He's getting savaged now because he's got a team full of 22 and 23-year-olds at a major tournament. There was a thing, Opta, who are a brilliant stats company, and they tweet out some stuff is brilliant, other stuff you'd have to be a real anorak to be into it, but England only moved the ball 0.98 of a metre per second or something last night, or on average throughout the tournament, and 0.7 of a metre per second, and it's the slowest in the tournament. I'm thinking, is this massive pile on Gareth Southgate then, that we're only moving the ball point, and it's like lies and damn statistics. You cannot win. So
but yeah. You can create a statistic to prove any point that you want, and that's the truth of it, you know. But like, the reality is, from Gareth Southgate and the squad's perspective, they'll be back in the team hotel. They've topped their group. They're through to the round of 16. They've a home game coming up, and they'll be more than happy
with
that.
Come here, isn't that the most important thing with any of these tournaments?
Yeah.
You have progressed to the knockout stage, and you bank what you've done. But to an extent, you turn
Absolutely.
A clear page and you build from here.
Yeah, but I think as well, like, look, they probably haven't been firing on all cylinders as yet, but you probably don't really want to be in the group stages and then have nothing left in the tank as it progresses. You do kind of have to pace yourself in a tournament. But like, some of their play, I thought, has been a little bit laborious, but, you know, yeah, like, once you get the job done, you have to forgive some of that. And, you know, like, it'll be interesting to see, do England, you know, improve as the tournament goes on? Because the reality is, looking at their previous performance, I think they'll have to. They'll have to improve if they're going to progress in the tournament.
Forsberg's had a second for Sweden, they now lead Poland by 2-0. But has there not been a significant rewriting of history that England, you know, there's this kind of thing that England were like the Brazil team from 1970 in the qualifiers and in the games up to this, which hasn't been the case, that there's this false historical narrative has grown up about the type of football they were playing and how they were over recent months, and they're now getting savaged in the tournament for not necessarily being the team that they were never in the first place.
Yeah, I suppose.
I know it took me a long time to get there, but I got there in the end. Not to get all political, but just UEFA, have you ever seen an organisation with the expertise they have to make a bigger hames of something like they have the issue around the lights at the stadium in Munich?
Yeah, I think it's a tricky one, because obviously, look, lighting up the stadium, there should be no problem with that. There really shouldn't. It's about basic human rights. It's about nothing more than that. It's about human rights. And I think the line and the statement that they issued today was that it's not the problem with the lights, it's the fact that they're only lighting it up to prove a point against a political stance that Hungary have, or, you know, a decision that was made in the Hungarian parliament. So it's become, whilst it's not a political symbol and it's just a human rights symbol, it's being used for a political purpose, and that's the issue that UEFA say they have. So look, I think the biggest faux pas for me that they actually made was raising an investigation into Neuer wearing the armband. That for me was the bigger faux pas. That was that was crazy stuff.
The other one is that they've opened themselves up to criticism that their stance on the pride flag, the stance on the rainbow and everything changed once they realised that Orban wasn't going to come to the game in Munich tonight. That it's, you know, but it's not even something we should be talking about.
No.
It's not even something that should become part of the narrative.
No.
But it's been handled so badly. We've texted in about transfers and everything else. Like, we're not going to have any major movement this side of the tournament. You know, like, where's Ronaldo going to go? You know, is he going to go anywhere?
Where's Sergio Ramos going to go?
Yeah,
yeah, you know,
he's
a player I'd love to see in the I'd love to see him in the Premier League.
Have it there first.
I would.
He's gone
I'd
to
love,
Terryland Park.
The board would love that speculation, but no, I think I think we're going to see a lot of movement. I mean, the biggest ones are Erling Haaland. Where is he going to go? I think the talk today is that Chelsea are not going to get him, and it looks like he might go to Real Madrid instead. You know,
isn't it that one little domino? If Kane goes from Spurs to Chelsea, you know, it's how many times have we seen this, that one transfer kicks it off and then hysteria breaks out. And we've not really had a situation where someone's come from the blue to become the star of Euro 2020. You'll always have this inevitable clamour over somebody who will revert to not setting the world on fire once some club has spent an absolute fortune on him. So I'm determined some year to collate all the transfer speculation and see how much of it is actually true, because it must be in the single digits of accuracy.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I certainly being on the coaching side of it, I've seen some speculation and gone, what really? But look, it's the nature of the beast, isn't it? It's the nature of it. And I do think this is going to be a very hefty transfer window. Right. I think we're going to see a lot of movement after this tournament, and I think it'll have a big impact next season. What happens?
Irrespective of the fact that the narrative that's been put out there is that clubs don't have the money to spend because of, you know, COVID and lack of income and everything else, but you know, some owner somewhere is going to have his hand in his pocket, and then that's going to force everyone else to do the exact same thing.
Yeah, I think to be honest, I think the impact of COVID definitely has had a significant impact on the financial capacities of club to spend money. I think that is certainly the case, and it will rein the transfer market in, but there will be certain clubs that are financed in different ways by people who maybe haven't been as impacted and have those deeper pockets. I think what it will do is it will reduce the amount of teams that can compete for the most expensive players. That's what I think will happen.
Just before we wrap it up for now and we let you go off to watch the games before rejoining us, news today, 2,400 fans to attend the Munster hurling semi-final in a couple of weeks, and Bohemians, their UEFA Conference League game to take place at the Aviva, which I'm always torn on this. It's a great experience for the players to say, I've played in the Aviva. There's going to be more fans allowed in, presumably, because it's moving to a 52,000 capacity arena for whatever is allowed in. But are you taking away some of the advantage of, like, obviously the game can't be played in Tallymount, but if it was to be played in Tallaght, where the players are familiar with it, does it give you some kind of an advantage, or are you firmly go and play in the
I'm not
enjoy
sure
your
I'll
experience.
Be honest, no, listen, I'm not sure Bows would want to play in Tallaght.
Depends if they win.
Listen, I know they have a reasonable track record there over the last few years, but I think, you know, if you're going to play, you're certainly not going to play in the home of your biggest rivals in a European game. And I think, you know, if Dalymount is not where you can be, then the Aviva Stadium is the obvious alternative. I'd say Bows fans would have a lot more to say about it being in Tallaght Stadium than they would about it being in the Aviva.
It's been suggested in my ear, let's just move to Croke Park and let it, you know, stay north, you know, keep it north side. Right, anyway, on that, says he ball hopping. 51552 for your text, at GameOn2FM will get us on Twitter. We have a break to take. Lisa's going to go off and watch the football and come back to us, and we're going to chat camogie on the far side of this. Stay with us.
Dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide. Game on. GAA.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. Before we get stuck into the Gaelic Games, Spain have scored a fourth. 68 minutes played, they now lead Slovakia by 4-0. Ferran Torres, one of those cheeky backheel flicks at the near post that, if you were a defender, you're going to hate looking back on it in the match analysis when that comes up in a couple of days' time. So that leaves Sweden, incidentally, have conceded a goal. They now lead Poland by 2-1. So we still have Sweden top of the table, Spain in second place, Slovakia third place on 3 points. So we will keep a keen eye on that. We're going to hear before the end of the programme from Dublin star Ciarán Kilkenny. We're going to look ahead to the Ladies Gaelic Football National League final in a couple of minutes, but before we do that, let's look back on the camogie from the weekend. Delighted to say Aoife Murray is with us. Aoife, how are you?
I'm good. Good to be on.
And it's good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us. Before we get into some of the nuts and bolts of what was that win for Kilkenny, 118 to 115 over Galway, a great opportunity for Camogie, live television coverage Sunday evening. What else would any of us have been doing than sitting down to watch it if you were of that persuasion? And an absolute belter of a game, a great advertisement for the game.
Yeah, look, it was for me even to be able to go to a game. I mean, it was great to kind of experience some form of old normality, maybe. You know, even just walking up to the stadium, seeing other people. Okay, you still have to wear your masks. It's slightly strange, but obviously rules are there for a reason. But it was just great. I think there was a great buzz in the crowd, albeit a small crowd for you know, an 84-seater stadium. But, you know, the sun was shining and the game certainly lived up to what it should have been.
But when we look at the nuts and bolts, we're talking about Slovakia analysing the goal they've just conceded. When Galway come to watch the video of this one back, surely they're going to be left thinking, how have we not walked away from Croke Park with silverware in the boot of the bus?
Yeah, but I think, look, they had a huge amount of the possession, I suppose, in the first half. But, you know, when you're playing All-Ireland champions, they never give up that easy. And I think Galway will admit this, that they were never far enough ahead to really push the game home. And you have to give credit to Kilkenny, in particularly that third quarter, Damien, where they literally swung around with 9 points almost that they got in that third quarter, with an outstanding goal from Aoife Doyle. But then you have to give credit to Galway equally, Niamh Kilkenny coming up, smashing the ball to the back of the net. It was point for point, and the good thing for championship is both of them win for it in that second half, neither holding back. So I think it's a good sign for where the championship might go.
Just a word on the psychology of it, because I found that fascinating, that, you know, even, you know, pre-match and at halftime, the talk around this third quarter push that Kilkenny are able to put on, and, you know, slow starts and everything else. Does that factor into a player's head, that irrespective of what lead you have at halftime, is it ingrained into you to think, you know, these guys are going to come straight out at us because that's what they tend to do?
Yeah, look, I think it comes from experience, and Kilkenny had been there in the early rounds of the championship. Limerick almost beat them, Tipperary almost beat them, and they came through both times, in particularly in the fourth quarter in both of those games, Damien. So I think for Kilkenny, they always knew that there was a better performance in them. And if you're Galway on the other side, absolutely it's ingrained into your brain that you can never be too far ahead. Kilkenny are All-Ireland champions for a reason, and they're back into the league final for a reason. I know for myself, even on the other side of things, if you're a Kilkenny player and you're going down, 9 points to six at halftime, you know, you would be going into that dressing room still in a very positive place, knowing that there's this greater performance there. So the hardest thing is to get yourself physically and mentally up to that performance rather than waiting for it to happen.
But it bodes well, one would think, for the championship. And you know, again, we're looking at boat codes this weekend. We've repeats of the All-Ireland final. So, you know, you could lament if it's just going to be a top two and the rest. But, you know, the fare that was offered up for early season competition notionally the weekend just gone, you know, it bodes well for what might be to come over the coming months.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the group stages as well here, you know, there is an opportunity, particularly in Group 1, you know, you would be expecting Tip to top that. You know, then you have Wexford, Limerick and Offaly. You know, there's going to be a great year for one of those. But I would have always said that there was a top three, which was Cork, Galway, Kilkenny. Right now, I think there's a top two, Damien, being Galway and Kilkenny. And it's hard for me to say that as a Cork person. But I think those two teams are just slightly ahead. You kind of have Cork there holding up third place. I genuinely think Tipperary are literally 10 minutes away from knocking one of those top three teams off of that post. If they can get 10 more minutes in their leg, I think they'll create a shock, or what some people might perceive to be a shock in the championship. So certainly I would be looking out for them to kind of create a little bit of havoc in the top of the table side of things. And then you're looking at Cork really have to up it, or else they're going to be chasing those top two, Damien.
That is the challenge though, isn't it, that it's, you know, it's the chasing pack. You know, do you have to analyse the top two and see what you can learn from them, or just, you know, that's where the challenge exists?
It absolutely does exist, and it's great, but also you have to look at your own, whether it be set up, your own players' mentality, their mental fitness, their physical fitness, and see what you have to do. As I said, for Tip, all they have to do, Damien, is find 10 minutes. and they could have an absolute cracker of a year. So right now they've got 3 or 4 weeks where they have to dig in to their own performances and understand why maybe they're not getting the 60, 65 minutes in their legs and out of their talent and ability. If they can get that, then they can absolutely create a shock. And that goes for all the other teams as well.
It was a really busy weekend in terms of the results. You know, Down 3-8, Antrim 1-11 in the Division 2 final. Division 3 final, Wexford 13 points, Armagh 1-8, and Division 4 final, Cavan 3-16, Roscommon 7 points. Are they the notable results, or do we need to be looking at the relegation finals in terms of the other real stories of the weekend?
Well, I think firstly going to Division 2, Down winning that, coming up to Division 1, I think that's a big tick for them coming into the senior the senior championship, Damien. So that's going to be massive confidence for them and for the future of the sport in that county to be able to play Division 1. That was a big one for me. And then I think, yeah, you have to go to that regulation playoff between Waterford and Dublin on Saturday. A one-point win, nothing really between the teams either when you look at their results through the league. And that was a massive win for Dublin to stay up into Division 1. It is a long way back for Waterford, so there's going to be a lot of pressure on Waterford in that group too. They're back playing Dublin and now Down coming up to Division 1. Another big win for the likes of Cavan. I know they're putting a huge amount of time into Camogie there, which is obviously predominantly football county. So there was a few big wins, but I think Down winning that Division 2 and Waterford losing that regulation, they were two big results.
Yeah, just on that Division 2 final, so Down nipping Antrim, is that important more so for the county or just more so the geographical spread of the top-ranked competing counties across the country?
I think it's, and not to be too political about it, Damien, but I think it's a bit of both. Listen, I grew up with always having either Down or Derry actually really being really strong at intermediate and coming up into senior. For Camogie, geographically, it's really important to have the likes of Down up into that Division 1 table and into the senior. It helps other teams, and it also just shows that it's not just the same team year on year. Even the likes of Westmeath being senior as well, I think it really helps Camogie. It's a scene only that we could never do 32 counties, but I think as a Camogie supporter, you can really start to see that game really spreading into the 32 counties and hopefully opening up that senior door.
Yeah, it's really important, isn't it? That's what it's all about. Thanks so much, Aoife, for being with us. Look forward to chatting to you over the course of the championship as it rolls around. Thanks for your time.
No problem.
That's Aoife Murray joining us there, looking back on that game, and we're going to look ahead to the meeting of Dublin and Cork in the Ladies Football League final after the break. Stay with us.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. This is Damien O'Mara in the company of Lisa Fallon. Lisa, did you know that scoring with his first touch 44 seconds after coming on, Ferran Torres' goal is the fastest by a substitute in the European Championship match since Juan Carlos Valeron netted 39 seconds after coming on against Russia in 2004?
What a record. He's been great since he's come on. Actually, the substitutes have been brilliant for Spain since they came on.
And Enrique has absolutely emptied the bench.
He has, yeah. Well, you know, he can do that now. But like, what's for all the criticism that Spain got, they're now on course to equal the biggest margin of victory at the Euro finals.
You see, you've outstated me.
Do you know what I mean?
So Torres scored in the 67th minute. He thought he had a second in the 71st minute, but it's been given as an own goal.
No, it was actually Pau Torres.
He
thought it was his goal. So basically, Thiago Alcantara, he shot in, then the ball come back, Laporte got a header to it, it fell to Pau Torres, and then he nodded it goalwards, it rebounded off Dubravka, and then Kuka's attempt to clear it basically went into the net. So,
Sweden leading Poland by 2-1. Poland needs something quick to happen there, but it's done and dusted. Spain 5-0 aren't going to be beaten by Slovakia. Sweden 2-1 up on Poland. So Sweden to top the group, Spain to finish second, and Slovakia on 3 points.
Yeah, and Poland probably the biggest disappointment for me in the tournament.
Seriously?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I expected more from them. I actually expected them to get out of that group, okay. I'll be honest.
And where's it gone wrong?
They just haven't been, they've sat in so deep all the time playing a counter-attacking game of football. Lewandowski then is the player that's actually breaking too often. He's the player crossing the ball into the box. He's the player you need at the end of those crosses. So
yeah,
I just think tactically they've just been too defensive, too negative, and focused more on negating the other team rather than playing to their own strengths, because they've got some good players.
Into the 81st minute, we'll let you go off and watch the culmination of those games, and we're going to look ahead to the Ladies Football League Final, which takes place this weekend. Nadine Doherty, former Donegal Stars, with us. Hi Nadine, how are you?
Good, Damien, how are you?
Good to chat to you. Thanks for being with us. We're just chatting there before about the Camogie matches over the weekend and how great it was to see the top two in the country go to battle. And it's the exact same situation. We've been left with the two best teams in the country for the league decider this weekend.
Yeah, Damien, the exact same is right. And, you know, from week one, really, it was very obvious and almost predictable that these two teams would make it back to Croke Park, which we've been used to for the last few years. And look, there's nothing between them. You know, I suppose Cork, they've had a more impressive league record over the years. Now, I don't have the stats. I'm not as good on the stats tonight as you two in the studio.
To be honest with you, we're only reading what gets copy and pasted onto the screen in front of us. So don't worry, we won't hold that against you.
But, you know, no, Cork have a significant number of league titles behind them. Dublin don't. Dublin, I suppose, in recent years have used the league to blood new players, and it hasn't been a massive focus on them. But just with the nature of the competition this year, they've been able to do that, and week on week they've been able to build on performances. But look, back to Croke Park, both have huge experience on the big stage. They know each other so well at this stage, and there won't be much between them as per usual.
Yeah, I was looking at that earlier. When you look at, and you know, the cliche is Dublin are going to be going for the drive for five and everything else this year, but you would normally expect that correlation to exist between a team dominating the championship and being there or thereabouts. But you look at this Dublin team at the weekend, they're fallen over all Ireland medals, but very few of them have league medals, so that undoubtedly will be a motivator.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, you know, they have used it as a stepping stone for younger players coming up through the ranks. They've always performed really well in the league, but it just hasn't been a focus. And I suppose their management have always looked at tapering their training probably towards the championship. But look, Dublin need no motivation to win in Croke Park. They don't need any motivation to win against Cork and vice versa. You know, looking at those two teams, you know, Cork, psychologically, they're up for it this year. They're up for it every year. And there's been a big chat around Cork psychologically over the last number of years, and people have questioned, do they have it up there against Dublin? And I feel they do. And, you know, as we saw in the round-robin match, there was a point between the teams. There's been nothing between them, Damien, over the last number of years. And it'll just come down to, I feel, defensively, I feel Cork have really improved in their system this year. They play a very similar system to Dublin. You know, both teams get bodies back. They press the ball. They aim to force the shot from distance. But the difference at the minute, I would feel, is Dublin are probably executing it to greater effect. They're very organised, and they start their defensive system high up the pitch. Cork are similar, but I just feel that Cork discipline in that tackle, it's not where Dublin's is at. Their free count has improved as the league has gone on, but they still have a really, really high free count. And it's one-on-one situations for Cork where they need to be winning more, and that's where they're really falling down. You know, it was really evident against Donegal and against Dublin in the round-robin game, and both of those games, like, they conceded 3-10+. And if they haven't worked on that, and if they don't rectify that this weekend, they're going to have massive problems.
So Dublin, the slight favourites for you from the way you're talking there, is it of significant more importance to Cork in terms of markers for the championship to get a result though?
I don't know, Damien. Yeah, you know, myself and Marie would have spoken about this in the round robin game. We would have said, you know, psychologically Cork have to get over Dublin. They didn't, but there was only a point in it. I don't know, you know, yeah, look, you could say, yeah, Cork then will take loads from winning. Cork will take a lot from their performance, I feel. A win would do them, obviously, the world of good. It's not really going to affect Dublin, whether they win or lose. So, yeah, look, I suppose that is a fair point. If Cork do get over the line in that sense, it will give them a psychological advantage, but Dublin are still hot favourites for me for the championship as well.
Okay, the other final, the other Division 2 final, Kerry against Meath, that's the curtain raiser, 5 o'clock ahead of Cork against Dublin, which is 7:30. And then on Sunday, Laois against Kildare in Division 3 and Leitrim against Louth in Division 4. Which of them catches the eye for you then in terms of the other must-watch of the weekend?
It has to be Division 2 for me. You know, Meath and Kerry, two very different teams over recent years. You know, Meath, they're up from intermediate. They won their fourth intermediate final of Askin in a row in 21. And they've just been really impressive this year. I've been tracking them in challenge games and league matches. And, you know, they're a team who they requested to regrade in 2016 to go intermediate. and they started a completely new process. They built up their underage and got really good structures in place. They didn't do what a lot of teams do when they get regraded, is look for that instant success to get straight back up and bring older players in. They built from the ground up, and they're fully deserving of being in a Division 2 final. Kerry are quite exciting this year, and, you know, again, they've built, but they're a team that kind of puzzle me at times, you know, because it's Kerry, you'd feel they should be doing better, and they haven't really challenged for that Senior All-Ireland, so they will look to this final to give them a bit of a building block running into the championship. Okay. They had a stunning semi-final win over Monaghan. It went to extra time. It went to free kicks. So that will give them a massive psychological boost. But I just think they're my favourites at the minute because they just have a more balanced team. They've that experience of playing in Croke Park for the last 4 years, and they just have a huge momentum behind them, and they're looking good. And I feel for football, it'd be very good for me to win.
Okay.
But entertaining game ahead.
We'll see how it plays out. Nadine, enjoy the games. Thanks so much for being with us.
Cheers, Damien.
We're going to finish I should mention as well, Poland have equalised. Robert Lewandowski exactly in the middle of the box where Lisa said he should be, and he's got his second of the evening. So Sweden 2, Poland 2. Spain still 5-0 up on Slovakia into the final 3 minutes of the game. There, we are going to finish with Championship 2021. Obviously gets underway for the men, the football and the hurling this weekend. Dublin on the quest to win what feels like a never-ending cycle of All-Ireland senior football titles. They'll start the defence of their crown on Sunday week in the Leinster quarterfinals against either Wicklow or Wexford, who meet in Aughrim this weekend. I had the opportunity earlier on to sit down with Ciarán Kilkenny. So this far out from your championship return, is it a case of ramping up the training or simply tapering down in preparation of Championship 2021?
Yeah, I think everyone's really excited about it. Everyone was delighted to get back out onto the field again for the National League, get competitive games, and it's a bit of a change this year that the conditions are a little bit better for a championship in relation that we're starting the grounds a little bit harder, the weather's a little bit better, and because last year when we played the championship the conditions were a bit different, so people are excited about that, and I suppose to get those games, and now the championship's coming ticking fast then as well, so it's all about, I suppose, having a clean bit of health in your panel, so I suppose just trying to recover as best as possible and then just keep as fresh as possible for each game. And yeah, everyone's looking forward to it. It's going to be games are going to come ticking fast, so you just have to be prepared for each one as they come.
Are you a fan of that format, game after game after game? Do you prefer it that way?
Yeah, and the beauty of it is it's like, you know, it's going to be knockout then as well, so you have to be prepared for each challenge. You know, we've one game next week, and that's the only game you really can prepare for. I suppose the beauty then of being finished at the end of August, then is a bit of time off at the end of August as well for all footballers and hurlers that are playing. Yeah, just really looking forward to it.
Just in terms of the mindset then, when there's no safety net in terms of the back door, or, you know, a game in the Super 8s that maybe you can recover from if it goes the wrong way, is it a completely different mindset in terms of what's at stake every given afternoon?
Yeah, that's the big thing. It's knockout football, so anyone can beat them on any given day, and I suppose the best example of that is you know, last year, how competitive it was last year. And so yeah, you just have to be prepared for every game and learn from every game. So the last game we had and the last few games we had in the league, we try and learn as much as possible, and then all you have to do is prepare for the next game that's going to be next week out.
How satisfied are you as a group with where you're at after the league?
Yeah, like, look, we've been 4 or 5 months away from playing any competitive game of football at all, so everyone had lots to learn. It was just even good to be back out playing competitive games again, but the games came ticking fast, so you just had to go and get as much learnings as you could from each game and then just prepare for the next one then after that.
And how difficult is it then in terms of trying to hone a game plan? Because if people look at it, like, you know, you've not had an awful lot of time with the new management team in terms of how intense last year was and then rolling straight into this year. That is it difficult to just bounce from game to game in terms of building an ethos or building how it is you want to play under Desi?
Yeah, you want to just keep things as basic as possible, I suppose, and just kind of focus on the skills as much as possible. If you have your skills sharp, you're in good physical and athletic shape, that's the most important thing, that you're fit and healthy going into these games, because if you're fortunate enough to win your game and move forward, games are going to come ticking fast, so you just need to keep yourself in good shape physically, mentally, athletically, and then just keep your skills nice and sharp then as well after that.
And then the benefit that Dublin has, the player pool, the depth of your squad is going to be so important this year, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, it's every year changes, but it's come to a stage now that some of us lads that used to be the younger lads are starting to turn into the older lads, and we've lots of lads up there that are putting their hands up for positions, and it's very competitive within the group, so it's great to have that and have those younger younger lads pushing us on.
What Dublin have achieved in recent years, you know, your medal haul rivals most people in the country. What are you, 27 now?
27, yeah.
So how has your place within the dressing room changed in terms of, have you had to be, are you one of the old lads who are part of the leadership group now as much as anything else?
Yeah, it's you know, when you start off and with the group, you know, I'm getting lifts to training, and from, oh, you got lifts from training from Barry Callan and Alan Brogan, and now I'm giving Sean Bogler and a few other lads lifts now, so times change and it all happens in the blink of an eye, so you just have to enjoy it and appreciate it for as much as you can. And every year is different, like, you know, the last 2 years, this year has been different than last year. Last year was different than the year previous, so every year brings its new challenges, new experiences, new personnel, new people. So, and we all realise that you've only limited time that you get to play, and you never know what's going to be around the corner, if you're going to get injured or if someone else is going to take your place or whatever is around the corner. So you just have to, and that's the big thing with what has gone on in the world over the last year or two. It makes you appreciate being able to play a football match again. And even the last day when we were down in Breffni Park playing that game, even to just have our parents at the games the last day brought, you know, a new bit of energy, bit of atmosphere, and it meant so much to, you know, our family members that could actually go and attend the game then after that.
Is the crack still the same as it was though? Is that still the greatest enjoyment, the dressing room afterwards or whatever bit of sledging and crack goes on after training of a given evening? Or you know, people often talk about how much is at stake and how serious the modern Gaelic Games player has become. Is that accurate, or is that just something that's imposed upon you that maybe people don't get to see the private moments and what crack you have, you know, away from prying eyes?
Yeah, like, look, the thing that lads are looking forward to the most once we were able to go back and train with each other was actually seeing each other. Like, it was just even seeing faces, and as soon as you meet each other, you have a crack, you do a bit of slagging and have a laugh. I think, you know, I'm very fortunate for a lot of the time I was able to go in and teach them my skill and get that interaction, but for a lot of people they didn't. So to go, when we're, you know, able to go and see each other again, it brought, you know, a great energy just to even socialise and see each other on the field again. Like, it was, you know, and it makes you appreciate things a lot more.
You must be nearly packing the classroom up now at this stage, but you're eminently qualified to talk about, and like, sport is so important to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. To an awful lot of other people it's not important at all, but just give me that bit of insight, just how important it's been for kids in particular just to get back to some sense of normality, and what it must mean for people to have all sorts of sporting codes back and have something to be able to invest in emotionally and, you know, get away from how mundane the world has become for a lot of us.
Yeah, like, big time. Like, and I'm a primary school teacher, so, you know, I think it's vitally important to get outdoors and playing games and seeing friends and having fun and learning new things and learning new skills. You can't underestimate what that does for a young boy or girl, and just try and encourage them to get up and about as much as possible, because in both primary and secondary school there was a lot of work online, and, you know, in this day and age people are online a lot, whether it's playing games, looking at things. So just really encourage all boys, girls, teenagers, just get out and go for a walk, practice your skills, do any sport possible, because it's so good for yourself and your own well-being then as well.
To look to the year ahead, you know the support you get from people within Dublin, you know yourself at this stage, everyone outside of Dublin wants to see the run end and wants to see Dublin beaten somewhere along the way. How do you deal with, like, is the pressure of potentially losing greater than the pressure to try and go on and make more history?
Look, I think from our perspective, and I can only speak for myself, but I'm just happy to be back playing and chatting to people. It's just about the fact that there's a championship now to look forward to next week, just the fact that we're back playing even summer championship football again. It brings that bit of excitement, that bit of, you know, I always remember Ray Silk saying in Ear Till Sunday a couple of years ago, when you train on the wet days you dream about that fast ball, the hard ground, and that's it. Like, lads are just excited to get out and play a game on hard ground again. There's nothing wrong with playing in the winter, enjoy playing then, but it just brings a different element to go out and play in that sort of, those sort of conditions.
How much will you be looking at the potential opponents over the coming weekends, or do you just focus predominantly on yourselves? And, you know, it's a great thing to be able to cross the whitewash irrespective of what sport it is, to know if everything clicks, if we all do our own job, there's very few teams that can beat us.
Yeah, and in anything in any given life, even in within school, business, like, whatever sport, if you can't look far ahead, you just have to focus each step at a time. And, you know, our main target now is next week, whether it's Wicklow or Wexford, and we're going to pay them the respect they deserve, and we're really looking forward to that. Like,
the question everyone in Dublin wants to know, Stephen Cluxton flying behind closed doors, or can you give us any insight as to whether we're going to see him back again?
Yeah, like, look, we have a lot of lads to come back now and return to play at the moment, so we're really looking forward to all those guys. Once they come back in, they'll bring a serious amount of energy to the group within, so looking forward to him and a lot of other guys that have to come back in.
Wish you well with your head, Kieran. Thanks
a lot. Thank you.
Bye-bye. That's Kieran Kilkenny chatting earlier. As Ballygown and Energised Sport extended their sponsorship with Dublin until 2024, they're the proud official water and hydration partner of the Dublin County Board and are encouraging customers to close the loop by recycling bottles responsibly after use to ensure the bottles are reused sustainably. So that's Kieran Kilkenny. The car in the background, I promise you, was not looking to shepherd him away as I asked him about Stephen Cluxton. So Sweden have scored late on to beat Poland by 3-2. Spain 5-0 winners over Slovakia. So Sweden topped the group 7 points. Spain second in the group with 5 points. Lisa Fallon's been watching the games. We've talked about them a lot. So teams are in for later on, the big games.
Yeah, absolutely. So for France, we have Hernandez, Kimpembe, Varane, Koundé, Pogba, Kante, Griezmann, Mbappe, Benzema and Tolisso. So that's going to be, you know, the quality in that team. And they'll face the Portuguese side of Rui Patricio, Nelson Semedo, Ruben Dias, Pepe, Guerreiro, João Moutinho, Danilo, Renato Sanchez, Diego Jota, Ronaldo and Bernardo Silva. It's going to be an incredible game.
So France, top of the group, they play Portugal. So it's France 4 points, Germany, Portugal 3 points apiece. Who's going to progress here?
I think France will win, so they'll top the group. I think Germany will win, so they'll finish second. And I fear a little for Portugal.
Okay, we'll see how it all plays out. We have it on tape. Lisa Fallon, thanks for being with us over the course of the evening. Laura Lee Davies was our broadcast coordinator. Andrew O'Connor produced the programme. Stand by for Tara from Damien O'Mara. Till we chat tomorrow night, thanks for your time.
Game on 2FM. With Green Farm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. Available in selected stores nationwide. 2